Well, good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order. We're holding this meeting pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. And I want to direct the attention of members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find a lot of information. You'll find an agenda for the meeting, meeting materials, and then a lot, of course, from our past meetings as well. So I encourage you to check that out. With that, Mr. Dozlin, if you could please take the roll.
Everyone. Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Daphne.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Representative Cotiza Watoon. Representative Cotiza Watoon. Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Waslowick.
Are you ready to check out?
Cotiza Watoon present.
Brown bread. Representative Waslowick. And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott is present.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
And thank you, Mr. Dozlin. I do want to make sure you recorded, Mr. Dozlin, that Representative Cotiza Watoon indicated she was present. Not sure you got that, but
Ever is present.
Excellent. Thank you. And then just another bit of committee business. Representative Pryor, if you could move approval of our minutes from Tuesday, from March 8th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
All right. Thank you. So members, any additions or corrections to those minutes from March 8th? Not hearing any. All in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. Those minutes are approved. So members, I'm really excited for, I've been really excited to have today's hearing. I think I describe this as being a very exciting thing for early childhood governance nerds, of whom I'm one of them. But I suspect and I hope that we're all excited as well just to receive this report, have a discussion about these important issues of early childhood governance. And so just thrilled to receive that and have a discussion. And you'll note that the great, great bulk of our meeting agenda today is dedicated to this. And so more conversation I know to be had. I'll just remind everyone that that last spring we had requested this report that we're going to be receiving today. And I'm so grateful to the folks at MMB for putting it together. So I think we're ready to move to that. And I suspect that that the Commissioner Bailey is going to be kicking us off. I may be wrong about that. Nope, she's shaking her head. Okay, or maybe I'll leave it either her or Mr. Kane on mute and start us off. But I'll just note, I've carefully reviewed the report, and I think I encouraged you all a week ago to do so too. And there's just a tremendous amount of work that went into this and lots of great information. And so I'm just so grateful to Mr. Kane and Ms. Hermanson, and then to Commissioner Bailey for their work and leadership on this. So Mr. Kane, I see you're unmuted, so we'll have you kick us off. Thanks so much.
That sounds good. Let me just share my screen. I'm from the PowerPoint era, so I can't talk without PowerPoint, right? Let me get that up there.
No problem.
You're seeing that, I hope?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, yes, I'm Matt Kane. I'm a senior management consultant with management analysis and development at the Minnesota Management and Budget. At the request of the Children's Cabinet, we at MAD, as we're known, worked with them to produce the report on early childhood governance in Minnesota. I'm happy to be here this morning with the Assistant Commissioner, Aaron Bailey, to talk to you about the report. Co-author Lisa Hermanson Anderson is listening in and will be available for questions as well. Here's a quick slide. There we go. Here's a quick slide just for a sense of where we're headed with our presentation this morning. We're going to get to cover some background, offer some key takeaways, talk about findings for consolidation of early childhood governance, talk about findings for coordination, and then move to options, considerations, and next steps with Assistant Commissioner Bailey covering the next steps based on what the cabinet laid out in its cover memo for the report. The we'll dive in with some quick background. I have got a trigger finger this morning. I apologize for that.
No problem.
The idea of consolidating early childhood programs has been around for some time now and has been successfully adopted in an increasing number of states. Minnesota has explored options for governance several times in the last few decades. In 1995, Minnesota replaced the Department of Education with the more broadly focused Department of Children, Youth, and Families before reestablishing the Department of Education and distributing many programs back to other agencies in 2003. In 2011, a task force of the state's Early Childhood Advisory Council recommended a freestanding cabinet-level Office of Early Learning, although it failed to reach an agreement on whether to co-locate early childhood programs in one agency. And also in 2011, the state established an Office of Early Learning at the Minnesota Department of Education through the federal Race to the Top funding, and that was closed when the funding ended. In terms of this year's Early Childhood Governance Report from the Children's Cabinet, this slide offers a bit of background. A bill was introduced but not passed last year to create the Department of Early Childhood, consolidating select programs currently within Minnesota Department of Education, Department of Human Services, and the Minnesota Department of Health into a new cabinet-level agency. While that didn't pass last year, the legislature did appropriate $200,000 for the Children's Cabinet to produce a report on state-level governance of early childhood development care and learning programs and initiatives. And the Children's Cabinet consulted with MAD to produce the report and deliver it to the legislature and the governor. The report reflects a range of research and perspectives that MAD pursued to compile the Early Childhood Governance Report, including the ideas and suggestions from early childhood advocates, community stakeholders, and state officials in Minnesota and other states. And MAD carefully reviewed many studies and reports, drawing upon lots of good work by other researchers related to state-level early childhood governance and governance approaches in other states. MAD held 9 discussion sessions with a select number of interviews to get input from community stakeholders and early childhood advocates, reaching a total of more than 100 people who participated in those. We also interviewed experts and officials in other states to augment learnings from the reference research. That included interviews with Elliot Rigenstein at the Foresight Law and Policy Center and with Lori Connors-Tedros at the National Institute of Early Education Research at Rutgers. We participated too in a series of webinars on governance offered by the federal government this last fall to learn more from other experts, including that was how we got some wisdom from Dan Worry, you'll be talking later. MAD conducted conversations with top officials, including 2 commissioners at the state of Minnesota's departments that carry out much of the state's work on early childhood programs and services. And overall, we were able to complete significant research and engagement, but with a project timeline that allowed only a few months for research, we were limited in the level of engagement and the number of interviews feasible for this report. By way of illustration, this slide on the left lists the groups and community stakeholders and early childhood advocates that we engaged with. And there on the right is a list of the other states that MAD consulted for input on early childhood governance. So what stood out from what we heard? What are the takeaways? This slide outlines some of the overarching themes that arose from our research. Governance is important, it matters, and is worth spending time on getting it right. Consolidation offers opportunities for improved alignment, but it doesn't guarantee it. There are limits to what governance can accomplish. Changes to state-level governance are strategies, not the goal or the answer when it comes to early childhood systems and outcomes. The impacts of governance on outcomes is unclear based on the research done to date. We're not able to know the impacts tied to specific types of governance, in part because there are so many factors aside from governance that influence those outcomes. The national experts that we interviewed declined to endorse one model over another in the abstract and said that it often depends. Changing governance involves costs, but so too does sticking with the status quo. Some stakeholders in Minnesota supported consolidating governance and others opposed it. More supported it than opposed it. And of course, some were unsure where they landed on this question. Nationally, the scope for consolidation differs state to state and changes over time. And some worry that shifting Minnesota governance now might impede recent progress on coordination and alignment. Here's a quote pulled from the report that illustrates a general finding. Whatever it is, you should be very clear why you are changing governance, have a clear sense for what it is you are trying to accomplish, and then design the change to accomplish that. It's a quote from Elliot Rigenstein, but that emphasis on knowing the what was noted by other experts we talked to as well. The next few slides outline the potential pros and cons of consolidation that experts and stakeholders identified. These are potential pros and cons suggested by the research and by the sources that we consulted for the report. It's hard to know for certain that consolidation will have these impacts. Impacts are hard to track because, as I mentioned before, there are so many factors aside from governance that influence outcomes. Because the impacts are hard to identify, MAD presented in the full report all of the potential benefits and drawbacks that were suggested by community stakeholders, early childhood advocates, and state officials without passing judgment on their reasonableness. We didn't pass judgment because we couldn't, based on the research and analysis to date, we just couldn't make that call. So that's an important point to be aware of. I will mention that the legislation calling for the early childhood governance report required that the recommendations address these five areas that are noted on the slide. We asked about these in our interviews. Most of the people that we asked said it's hard to know what the impacts of governance will be in these areas. One researcher, Elliot Rigenstein, said the consolidation likely makes coordination and alignment much more possible, and in this way may reduce the effort required of families and providers in navigating the system. This slide presents an abbreviated list of the potential benefits or advantages to consolidation that were suggested by the experts, community stakeholders, early childhood advocates, and state of Minnesota officials, all listed together. In the report, we break these out by the source, so as to summarize the feedback from the public and the stakeholders as required by the legislative language for the report. A full list and thorough description of all the potential benefits, so these and a few others that aren't listed here, is found in sections of the full report that begin on pages 25, 40, and 44. I'll walk through the ones on these slides, starting with the children and families. So consolidation can allow for design of a system around children and families, so it's human-centered. It may address child care access issues. It may recognize trauma. It may provide a one-stop shop for the services. In terms of consolidation, when it comes to government operations, that may be lead to improvements in coordination and alignment. It may allow agencies to focus on other priorities. They've got a lot on their plate, and if early childhood moves out, they can focus on those other things. It could lead to cost savings and reduced duplication. It improves quality, may improve quality and consistency. It may improve data sharing. It may offer opportunities for public-private partnerships. In terms of the policy and program impacts, having a consolidated agency, it's a new or elevated focus on early childhood, the unified authority and accountability, so we can it can raise up that profile and have some influence. It may avert systems failure. There's worried about that with childcare. It designs a system. It allows for design of a system around equity, addressing racial, ethnic, income, and geographic inequities. It allows for a reconsideration of the value of childcare workers, often undervalued. It increases funding and resources and reduces competition. That was another potential benefit. It may create positive culture around programs, and it may sustain support for early childhood efforts across political shifts. So when people, the administrations change or what have you. As you can see from this slide and can see even more in the full report, our sources suggested a very wide range of goals for consolidation. So that last slide gave you a sense for the pros that we heard. This slide presents an abbreviated list of the potential drawbacks or risks to consolidation, again, suggested by the range of sources. So the full group, from the experts to the stakeholders, the advocates to the state officials, all listed together. And once again, we break these out in the full report. The executive summary, I know most people simply read executive summaries, and I get that. But the executive summary still groups some of these together, but the full report breaks them out by each of those groups. The full listing and descriptions for all the potential drawbacks is found in the sections of the report that begin on pages 50, 52, and 55. So let me walk through these quickly also, again, starting with children and families. In terms of the potential drawbacks, consolidation may complicate service delivery if the state decides poorly on the agency scope. It may worsen fragmentation in service delivery. In terms of government operations, consolidation, if it's complex reorganization, it can be difficult to implement, especially during a pandemic. It may lead to disruptive shifts in current public-private relationships. It could intensify competition for funding and resources. There may be various upfront costs involved in program transfers. It's not guaranteed to succeed. When it comes to policies and programs, some of the potential downsides, it may distract attention from funding and efforts to improve alignment and effectiveness. It may alter coordination paths and create fragmentation and disrupt current progress. It might reduce early childhood standing and influence. It may undermine whole family approach that Minnesota takes. It doesn't directly address challenges that some people are concerned about. It starts with the governance first, and it may emphasize cost reductions rather than improved and expanded services, coming from people who are concerned that those are the things that are needed. Let me mention again that the report presents the ideas that we heard from our sources for potential benefits and potential drawbacks, and we were unable to pass judgment on them, so we simply put them in and said, you know, here's smart people telling us stuff. And that leads to some interesting considerations. And indeed, here on this slide, for example, we list a comment made by several people that consolidation could intensify competition for funding and resources. On the previous slide of potential benefits, we noted the suggestion that consolidation could elevate early childhood and therefore increase the standing and influence. Here we note that others saying that moving the early childhood programs out of the large influential state agencies to freestanding ones could reduce the standing and influence. These ideas are clearly contradictory, so maybe it depends. I don't know. We ran into this too with comments about reducing or increasing competition or increasing funding. Some saw consolidation as leading to more funding for early childhood programs and initiatives because it raised the profile, while others worried that a new consolidated agency would have less sway over funding for early childhood than the larger existing agencies. So some contradictions, lots of ideas. For our research, we talked to officials in other states that have consolidated early childhood programs or are in the process of doing so. Here are some of the key points from that research. There is not one correct governance model. The governance structure will change over time. It's important to dedicate time and resources to planning and stakeholder engagement when you make this move. Increased efficiency and decreased costs are unlikely, which was something of a surprise for us. They said, don't bank on it. Local level coordination is crucial to success. It's important to communicate early and often, offer multiple modes for input. Leadership and political choices shape the outcomes. Coordination is still needed because so many areas of state government affect families and early children, children in their early years, and so that coordination continues to be important. And does consolidation attract more funding? We got different answers from different states. The next few slides are going to outline the input from experts and stakeholders on the pros and cons of coordination. MAD prioritized gathering input on consolidation and a consolidated approach and asked about coordination as time allowed. Therefore, we captured less expert and stakeholder input on the coordinated approach as opposed to the consolidated one.
Mr. Kane, before you go on, could you just, and I feel like you may have missed this or I may have just missed this, but just could you just sort of make clear the different, you know, there's sort of consolidation could be creation or consolidation, then coordination is the approach where, just to sort of define these terms if you don't mind.
And that's so exactly where I was headed. Very good point, Chair Pinto. I was going to call out that this one is called the coordinated approach. And yes, let me add a little bit of detail to that. So as is the case in Minnesota right now, the coordinated approach is one where you have early childhood programs and initiatives across various agencies in state government, and you focus on coordinating those efforts across those agencies. The consolidation would be bringing it into one agency, but understand that a consolidated approach to governance is also pursued by states to improve coordination. If you're looking at a consolidated model for governance, it's about coordination too, like you're bringing it into one place and working on coordination there. But with a coordinated approach to early childhood governance, because you're keeping the work in the different departments, you have to have that coordination among them. Does that help, Chair Pinto?
It does, yeah. And I really just want to make sure folks knew about just the basic defining terms that sort of there are three major options that states can take and then what this and you may have said that at the beginning, but I think I did not.
That's a, okay. Yes, excellent point. One of them is the consolidated approach, which we've talked about. I just mentioned the coordinated approach, and there's also the option of doing coordination with a formal office that was in charge of it, which I'll talk about in a bit in these slides. So for our research, we talked to officials in, there we go. I went backwards. Here is an abbreviated list of the potential advantages of coordination as provided by experts as well as community stakeholders and advocates and state of Minnesota officials. And once again, they're separated out in the full report and there's more information. You would go to the sections of the report that start on pages 60 and 61. The points in italics are suggested benefits from having a formal office within state government charged with coordination. So in some states, for a while here in Minnesota, the idea is that they do use coordination, but they say, hey, we're going to put an office in charge of that to make sure it happens. And some of the points regarding that are they echo ideas that were shared as advantages to having separate agency. So again, I'll go through these quickly, starting with children and families. Both of these points are about having a formal office for coordination. It would allow for a single point of contact for services, and it would increase the visibility of early childhood challenges and the early childhood efforts. In terms of government operations, with coordination, if there is a commitment to coordination, it can reduce fragmentation. Taking that approach may avoid additional costs that are involved in restructuring. It maintains a current structure, which could be a pro, could be a con. Having coordination with the state structure, it can match the federal funding streams because the federal funding is coming from different agencies and then going to different agencies at the state level. In terms of having an office for coordination, it can increase accountability and it can be housed in an existing state agency. In terms of that policy and program area, using coordination, it ties back to the agency's policy focus. So if you're dealing with early childhood health, it's in an agency that's about health, and so they have that expertise. In terms of having an office to coordinate, it can provide some identifiable office about that issue. It can boost awareness of its importance and create a single point of contact. And here's an abbreviated list of the potential drawbacks or risks of coordination as provided by experts and community stakeholders, early childhood advocates, and state officials. Again, the full report has more on these and other points as well, separated out by the sources, and they're found on the section that starts on page 62. And again, the points in italics are the ones that are tied to having a formal office for coordination. Here, when we're talking about government operations, a downside taking the coordination approach is that coordination may have a lower priority. It might not happen. The structure could be vulnerable to political to changes as in political focus and in leadership. With coordination, there may not be clear accountability. There may be trouble tracking budgets and funding. It may need dedicated staff with some authority to really make coordination happen. And if it's a formal office, it may require funding staff and other resources. In terms of the policy and program area, having the programs across the different agencies, it's lower visibility. It may run into issues with diverse priorities and goals. Those agencies have overarching priorities and goals that may be different from early childhood. It could involve slow and difficult decision-making. You may see siloed programming and funding. In terms of an official office of coordination, it may have coordinating responsibilities but lack the authority to enforce those, and it may create another layer of governance. In terms of options and considerations and next steps, I'm going to start with another quote. An earlier slide used to introduce key takeaways, I presented a quote from Elliot Rigenstein about the importance of figuring out why you want to change governance and then determining what change can accomplish that goal or goals. As we talk now about options, here's a sort of companion quote from Rigenstein and researcher Catherine Lipper, noting that you want to keep an open mind on what governance approach to use and focus on the goals and the functions, not the governance per se. Again, the point is to identify the priorities and then figure out what governance approach will address them. And the advice we heard was don't start by assuming that governance should be a coordinated approach or that it should be a consolidated one. Matt drew upon research for this report to offer the following list of options and potential approaches for consolidation. The ideas listed are neither all-inclusive nor mutually exclusive. Details about these options can be found in the full report starting on page 21. Given the interest in improved state-level governance in early childhood programs in Minnesota, Matt suggests in the report that action is warranted. But again, we did not recommend one model over the other for the state. So I'll just go through these. The first one would be to continue with a coordinated approach across agencies, but with staff, funding, and authority necessary for progress beyond the level of coordination that had been occurring prior to the recent and positive developments on that front. A second would be to increase the Children's Cabinet's funding and expand its role in cross-agency coordination and alignment. A third would be to identify key priorities to address for the state-level early childhood system, analyze whether a change in governance will significantly affect them, and if so, decide on what form of governance would work best. A fourth would be to create an office within state government charged with coordinating early childhood programs and the early childhood system across state agencies. We talked a bit about that. A fifth would be to ensure early childhood policy and programs are consolidated within each of the three key departments. So the programs and initiatives that each of those departments have, having those consolidated perhaps under assistant commissioners or with coordination assigned to assistant commissioners. A sixth that we laid out was to commit to consolidation of early childhood programs and policies, define the scope for the age range and the program areas, and engage in planning to increase support and lay the foundation for this change. And a seventh would be to mandate consolidation now and work through the potential missteps and adjustments later as they arise. So in effect, fire the gun and go with it. Matt asked community stakeholders, early childhood advocates, and Minnesota state officials what needs to happen or what needs to be true for consolidation to be successful. In this way, the report gets at how programs could be consolidated. This slide highlights some of the prominent or relevant responses, and then the full list of what needs to be true or what needs to happen is found in page 28 of the report. So just to go through these a bit, start with the key challenges for early childhood efforts, governance or not, figure out what the real challenges are. Plan for governance change using dedicated staff resources and taking the time to do it. Engage with leaders and secure buy-in. Figure out the nuts and bolts of business systems. Factor in and sort out the implications of a governance change for local service providers and state and local roles. And determine the funding and resources needed to advance the state's early childhood efforts relating to some concerns people had about making sure that that funding and resource issue is addressed. Other responses to what needs to happen or needs to be true are listed on this slide. Engage a wide range of those involved in early childhood. Identify the appropriate scope for the age range and the programming. Involve the state agencies. Take time and wait time. Build on what's being done. Designate a convener within state government. Coordinate communications. Be clear and consistent. Manage the organizational change. Hire an excellent manager at the top. And determine authority for restructuring. In terms of next steps, having run through the information found in the report in brief, I'll turn things over to Assistant Commissioner Bailey to talk about the next steps.
That sounds good. And as we do, Mr. Kane, I'll thank you again at the end, but thank you so much to you and Ms. Hermanson-Anderson for your work. This is just, I know it's just a ton to pull it all together. It's really, really impressive. So I thank you so much. And then we turn things to Commissioner Bailey, and thanks so much for being with us again, Commissioner. We always appreciate having you, and please take it from here.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erin Bailey, and I am the Executive Director of Minnesota's Children's Cabinet, which is housed at Minnesota Management and Budget, and is interagency partnership with the mission of aligning people, data, money, and policy around children, similar to the 35 plus other states around the country who have children's cabinets. First, I want to thank Matt Kane, Lisa Hermanson-Anderson, and the Minnesota Analysis and Development Division for their excellent work on this report and under very tight timelines. We are very grateful for their work and all of the learnings included in the report. I also want to thank the hundreds of leaders, parents, providers, advocates, and others that provided insight and expertise for the report. This takes time, and we appreciate the findings that will be critical to the important next steps in the conversation on early childhood governance. I also want to thank the legislators who supported the legislation around the report, providing the opportunity for us to examine these important questions on best state governance models to improve the lives of children and families and lead to a strong, sustainable, and impactful system. The legislation and subsequent independent report were an opportunity to bring together a wide range of voices, ideas, and examples of successful governance approaches. When we submitted the report and executive summary related to early childhood governance authored by MAD to the legislative committees with jurisdiction, I included a cover memo outlining recommended next steps. As MAD acknowledged in their work, their report was not able to come to a conclusion or recommendation on governance and consolidation. However, the independent report authored by MAD recommends a series of next steps that should be undertaken for a successful consolidation. The report states that Minnesota should change its current approach to early childhood governance and that action is warranted. As the Children's Cabinet Executive Director, I support and agree with these findings and recommendations. MAD suggested, as Mr. Kane described, that we should first determine the purpose and priorities and then determine whether governance should be a solution. We should dedicate staff time, plan for any consolidation effort, and map administrative and practical requirements, as well as authority needed for restructuring programs and agencies. And that this work should be done with ongoing stakeholder engagement and involvement and buy-in with state agency officials who have deep knowledge, experience, and commitment in the policy and administrative details of the programs and services. Our cover memo recommends that the state move forward with MAD's recommended next steps. Specifically, identifying resources to create dedicated staff and time to create an implementation plan that supports a sustainable governance approach that advances the state's early childhood efforts and builds on what's been done. As many advocates have said and shared through the letter to the committee, we need to move in this direction, and we need to take the logical steps to further do the analysis and planning to ensure that we're thoughtful in our approach and consider legal and funding implications, to learn from other states, and to center children and families in all of our decisions. Similar to the letter, we've also heard feedback from other stakeholders whose mission is improving the well-being of children in areas of foster care, juvenile justice, opportunity youth, mental health, and underscore the importance of our cabinet convening around this work. The first step is securing resources to execute a detailed analysis, building from and informed by this report, as well as an expert management necessary to coordinate planning and implementation of a governance change. We need to build on this governance report and create an action-oriented, comprehensive plan informed by stakeholders and other state efforts that is thoughtful, thorough, guards against negative impacts, and leads to positive outcomes for children and families. Additionally, it should plan for continued coordination needs, as the report finds that coordination will always be essential. From the perspective of the Children's Cabinet and the work we have led in the administration, I want to offer an insight and priority that was lifted up and considered in other states as well. Any governance approach, whether a stronger, fully funded coordination function, a consolidated office, or a new agency, must ensure a whole family approach. Considering the health and stability of a child's family and community is the most important in supporting their positive development. This is communicated in that it's far-reaching scope and it means complicated in its far-reaching scope and means we must make sure we don't inadvertently negatively impact the sets of services, funding streams to young families that must be coordinated, such as Medicaid, mental health services, and workforce supports. But it is critical, as we know, that the best investment in a young child is an investment in their parent and their home. Parents are their first teachers, their caregivers, their supports. New research even highlights the impact the child tax credit has had and how funding supports impact on brain development prenatally. Further, we know and hear about the needs for consolidation and coordination in other areas, as I mentioned, related to childhood, youth, and families, out of school time, mental health, juvenile justice, and special populations, opportunity youth, and fosters. As the Children's Cabinet moves forward with taking on our next steps, building a plan for how such governance changes takes time. We plan to use the State Advisory Council for Early Education and Care and the Children's Cabinet Advisory Council. We must ensure ongoing engagement with our local government and service provider partners, as the report stresses it is so important due to their role in service delivery, as well as other stakeholders and families. We also look forward to working with all of you, our partners in the legislature. There is much to build on thanks to the successes, lessons learned, and systems and coordination work underway through the state's preschool development grant, including what's outlined in the PDG needs assessment and the state strategic plan that grew out of the Children's Cabinets. Now, more than ever, we need to focus on our littlest Minnesotans and those who care for them, especially their families and the early care and education workforce. While we work towards these steps around governance, we can address the needs. Increased funding for access, affordability, and the workforce in our early childhood system, family economic supports, mental health and well-being. With more than a $9 billion surplus, we have a historic opportunity to invest in early childhood. Investment now in the Child Care Assistance Program, in early learning scholarships, in mixed delivery pre-K programs, our child care businesses and their heroic workforce, home visiting, and other wraparound supports will lay the foundation for a more functional system and governance in the future, and most importantly, ensure that our littlest Minnesotans have the best start in life. I look forward to continued conversations on early childhood governance, with our goal always, always focused on children at the center, and ensuring that our next steps are what will have the greatest impact on our outcomes for children and families. Thank you for your time and attention to this report, and to the needs of our youngest children and their families. I look forward to your future collaboration on next steps, and I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, and thank you for your attention and focus on our state's kids and families. The youngest kids and all kids, and you you and your team have been just incredible over these last years, and thank you so much. And really appreciate you highlighting a number of those points along the way about the need to support parents, take whole family approach, and all of it. So good stuff. So members, we are ready for questions. I see Representative Pryor's hand up. And so I guess we'll dive into questions. Then I know there's some different directions we'll go, and we'll bring in another guest in a little while. But let's start with you, Representative Pryor.
Chair Pinto?
Yes. Oh, Mr. King, please. Yeah.
If I could just jump in, I misspoke earlier when you were looking for the types of ways to organize this, and the assistant commissioner mentioned them. It's to consolidate into a freestanding agency that's solely dedicated in early childhood. It's to consolidate into an existing state agency with a broader mandate than early childhood alone. And then the third is coordination. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to clarify that it's in the executive summary in the report.
A key point. Thank you, Mr. Kane. And Mr. Kane, actually, Representative Pryor, I'll just to clean this up. First, Mr. Kane, I think you and I have spoken previously that in coordination as well, you could think of it as either the formal coordination where there's an office that's in statute, or we have what's would be called informal coordination, though, of course, it's, you know, there's a lot of formalized relationships and incredibly hard work going on. Am I describing that right, Mr. Kane? There's sort of
that is absolutely, yes, that's absolutely correct. And it's why we tried to call out some of those different areas in the coordination and pros and cons slides, where it was talking specifically about having a formal approach or office to coordination, which is not something that Minnesota has identified at this point, although I will add that the Children's Cabinet does a lot of that in its work.
Yeah, and I suppose the one difference just is that it is not in law, so if there's a change in administration, there can be changes there. But otherwise, yeah, obviously tons of formal relationships and formal work that goes on right now. Is that right, Mr. Kane?
That's right.
Okay, perfect. Okay, good. So members, we can think about kind of four major options in terms of governance for the state, as we said. So, okay, with that being said, Representative Pryor, we'll call on you to kick us off.
Thank you. appreciate that and appreciate the presentation this morning and hearing the results of the reports. It's something that I read through, but it's also nice to hear somebody walking through it too and just highlighting the key points. So very useful. And just, you know, as we kind of go back to this discussion, I think that I would like to preface it by kind of introducing why we launched the study and why we thought it was important to fund it is, and this is what this committee knows, this is what everybody in the Children's Cabinet knows, this is what everybody that's working with these early childhood programs across our agency knows, and what all the stakeholders know, is that early childhood, this the prenatal to three or the first 1,000 days, however you want to describe it, it's the most critical time in a person's life. And every child has to get it right, or that person and that family and that community is working with the results of what didn't get right, what we didn't get right. So it's this normal, nurturing environment surrounded by people that, you know, is critical to a child's development. And it's probably the most important thing that our most important responsibility as a state is to make sure that we get it right for every child. And we know this. And so then, you know, as a legislature, we say, okay, why is it we keep underfunding? Why is it we keep missing the mark for, you know, what we see in infant care and child and daycare setting, that, you know, it's underfunded, that parents can't afford the cost of taking their infant to a child care center or a child care home because the rates are too high, but the people that are providing the care are being underpaid and subsidizing the system that's not working. So, you know, we know how important this is. So, you know, we ask questions about how can we do a better job? And so that's, you know, what we're building off of the report. So now my question, which is, I want to go back to those next steps. You know, part of it, it's just like time frame. Is this, and is up, you know, also, is this being done offline? That, you know, here's the report, we're going to go back and work on things. And we're the legislator. We like to know what's going on. We like to see progress. We like to see milestones. We like to know about who's accountable specifically. And things like that. So I guess, you know, even the slide about the next steps, just to hear more can you give us maybe some examples of things that will be happening in the future, and the future being like, you know, this week or next week, and that kind of thing. So I don't know, just some more about what the next steps are.
And I'll note, as I would assume be the commissioner, and of course, I know Representative Pryor, that there's a ton of coordination and efforts going on just constantly. I don't know if your question, I'll just maybe just ask, is your question, Representative Pryor, more about kind of what we do, or you're asking about what the legislative response should be, or the broader governance, or are you asking about kind of specifically what's happening within the administration? Because I know there's just a ton going on.
Yeah. And so both. I mean, coming back to us, you know, what's expected of us to give further direction, but also to know, you know, what these coordination efforts are looking like right now. And assuming that having studied that there's a greater awareness and understanding and maybe some things that are happening that are building on what's developed from the report. And so I confused the question again. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
And I'll just say I have the impression that the model of informal, which is really quite formal coordination we have right now, the people doing it are working incredibly hard and incredibly well from everything I can tell. But I'll let the commissioner, if she wants, or Mr. Kane sort of comment about, you know, next steps or those sorts of thoughts, sort of whatever you want to in response to Representative Fryer's questions. Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Pryor. And Matt, I'll put you on the spot in a second here. I will say I'm happy to come back to the committee and speak to the work that's happening. I think of the Children's Cabinet as a tool or a platform of shared governance. We are that space and in statute to convene commissioners around a children's agenda. So I think about this work being a part of everything that we do. To give you some specific examples, the state launched at the end of last year a fiscal map on how we spend our resources related to children, with a very significant undertaking across the enterprise on how we spend our money with ages under 18, and are doing specific analysis on what that looks like for early childhood, which in my mind is an essential piece to understand what are the key programs and components that we have to reach that shared vision that you've outlined, which is getting it right for kids, and I would argue means getting it right for their family. And so what are those places and spaces that we work together? The Children's Cabinet convenes to take some of those specific issues related to childcare and early education. We right now convene, I believe 11 agencies participate, a childcare action team that is working on the coordination across those supports, and we could come back and deliver kind of that specific work. In terms of the movement to a consolidation, I wouldn't say that the next step will certainly take funding to secure resources, time, engagement, mapping, and expert management, as the report outlines. We don't believe this next step requires legislation and are looking at options for available funding today, to your point, this week. And I'll say, I just, you know, on behalf of my agency colleagues, if they would like to add anything else, I would say that we share the mission and passion is something that's shared and is worked on each and every day. I think the preschool development grant was highlighted in the report of another space where that work is happening actively. But this is not the case where our goal is to say we want to do this later or not. It's to make sure that we're doing it in a thoughtful way that is positively impacting people's lives and will be sustainable, as there's some key learnings from sort of the history of Minnesota, having been through this in previous iterations as well. But Matt, do you want to jump in? And I don't know if Assistant Commissioner Manning or others want to sort of jump in on some examples of work or what they're doing.
Yeah, and I do know we have the Assistant Commissioner Manning from the Department of Health and Assistant Commissioner Burnham from MDE on as well. I'll go to Matt. I might suggest that we focus on kind of steps that we could take, or steps regarding governance more generally. I think that we may want to take the commissioner up on her offer to come back to talk about the many, many coordination efforts and work that's happening right now. But Mr. Kane, maybe if you want to jump in.
Sure. The next step sort of moves beyond the MAD role in looking at the issue. I will say this, and I think it's an important point, that there has been significant coordination going on recently and alignment and across a number of areas. Something even called out by one of our national experts who expressed concerns about what would happen with that. But a lot of that, has been driven by the excellent work of the Children's Cabinet, but it has been funded by the Federal Preschool Development Grant, and that funding ends at the end of this year. And so, you know, as our report says, you know, as a baseline, don't let that go. But even that would require some next steps. And I'll turn it over to others who are a lot smarter about how things go and where from here.
Yeah, and commissioners, if there's thoughts that you have, jump on in. Commissioner Manning, please.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Mary Manning, Assistant Commissioner, MD8. Preschool development grant, we're doing a lot to coordinate across with MDE and MDH. And what I think is really important to consider is like that whole family approach. It's really wonderful to be working with the entire family, because we know it's really the social determinants of health. And really having the whole family feel supported and ready to help the child develop in the best way that's possible. It's not without substantial investments in the social determinants like home visiting, which is something that is we're doing with the preschool development grant, and other mental health supporting services in education. And I would say that a lot of the things that are in Governor Walz's budget right now really go a long ways to really supporting the social determinants, because we know if families don't feel like they are having their housing and their economic stability and their mental health and safety issues addressed, and a lot of the investments that Governor Walz's budget has in it really helps us work with families to make sure that those things are addressed, are really what's needed for kids. And how we do that together, I think we're really doing a lot of that work right now through the relationships. And I think you said that you didn't want to hear a lot of specifics about that.
But
I really think that it's really more investment in those things that address the social determinants that are really going to be what's going to be helpful for kids in the long term.
Okay. Thank you so much. Commissioner. Yeah, and I do think, as I say, I think it makes sense for us to hear, and we'll look into hearing more about the coordination work that's happening right now. One thing I want to make sure we have time for is to build off the governance report about these different options and next steps. And we do have another guest to be presenting as well. So Commissioner Burnham, though, I see you're on mute, and want to make sure if there's something you want to add on that, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pinto. Committee members, I want to definitely echo Assistant Commissioner Bailey and Manning's comments around the preschool development grant has provided us an opportunity to build a very strong base, but that's just what it is the base. And in Governor Walz's budget and in our continued work and coordination across the agency, we are really focusing on that early care and those early educators. We need to focus more deeply on workforce in promoting higher wages in our workforce of our childcare providers and in our pre-K teachers. And as Commissioner Manning mentioned, the mental health aspect, especially after these 2 years, is very important. So the mental health, the home visiting. And then of course, from the MDE side of thing, it's that mixed delivery model and that opportunity to increase access and build those partnerships across communities within Head Start and childcare providers. So preschool development grant was a great start, but we have to keep moving forward, and it's going to take the support of the legislature and continued coordination, because a lot of these pieces and a lot of needs for that whole family approach are in this governor's budget. So I just wanted to really promote the opportunities that budget presents.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Yeah, so I'm going to move on to, we've got a couple other questioners. I do want to make sure to get to our other guests by 9:30. So Representative Bolden, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just thank you for this presentation, which has been very interesting and very helpful. And want to just also recognize, as has been said, there are lots of people in this space working really, really hard with the doing the very best they can with the, intention of doing best they can for families and kids. So just want to, again, name that. And so I come to this just thinking about the sort of the systems and the processes, knowing that individual people are doing an excellent job. And so just wanted to share a couple of observations, and then I'll get to a question. And thinking back to one of the earlier slides looking at the pros and cons, and appreciate that being laid out, and the recognition that based on conversations you all had with folks, there were some contradictions of on both of those slides of the pros and cons. As I see those and heard you talk about those, something that stood out to me is perhaps a theme of the pros of moving towards a consolidated department. Many of those were centered on families and our littles, and you know, looking at it from that lens, and you know, being trauma informed and being focused on racial equity and smoothing out processes and that experience for families moving through was a lot of that focus, is how I heard that. And then the potential cons or challenges of doing that to me seemed there was focus on like the processes and the challenges of staffing and finances and some of those logistical challenges, which are real things. But I just also wanted to reiterate that in a time when we have a $9 billion plus dollar surplus, perhaps this is the time to be really making those strong investments, and want to be sure that we are focusing on those families and littles and their experience. So just wanted to recognize that. Also just sort of observation in terms of committee structure, and as I'm new to this process, but in terms of, you know, we have this committee in the House, which we, you know, experts on both sides of the aisle, and the other body, there's not a committee matching up. And so logistically, when we get to the end of session and there's negotiations, those discussions related to early childhood, my understanding is, you know, those get split between two very large committees of, you know, education and human services. And I wonder about just the challenges of that and not having, potentially having experts in early childhood as we are on both sides of the aisle in those negotiating conversations at the end of session. Again, not that everybody's not trying to do the best, but not having that focus on early childhood, I think, is concerning to me, and not having any one person who's directly accountable for that. I think there's opportunity there. So all that said, a follow-up question then on Ms. Bailey's.
Which I can be pretty quick, yes, Representative Bolden.
Sorry. Follow-up question to Ms. Bailey around your vision or how you see implementation of sort of the next planning for governance implementation. You referenced that earlier to Rep. Pryor's question. So any follow-up you have with how you see that moving forward or next steps?
Commissioner Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Pinto and Representative Bolden. I mean, to be really specific, like our work underway is to identify that oversight structure and key folks who would be leading those next steps that we talk about in the cover memo. So identifying resources to do that. And I'll just thank you while I have the floor for your comments about sort of legislative coordination. I think that's another finding. I don't know if Matt has anything would add on there, but I know we're sensitive to time, but just other states, that has been kind of a piece, and frankly, a piece of the conversation in Minnesota previously too, is sort of the structure. I think about Vice Chair Pryor's question on what the legislature can do, and so much of sometimes what we experience in fragmentation for families is based on those eligibility requirements or programs in terms of where programs are placed and agencies executing what the legislature has asked them to do. So I think there is a lot of space for that conversation.
And I'll note that certainly has been a motivator for me as someone who advocated for consolidation, is the legislative fragmentation, the budget fragmentation part of it. So yeah, I would like, I don't see Mr. Kane on muting, and I think we have another question here, Representative Katiza-Batun, and then we'll move to our guest, Representative Katiza-Batun, or other guest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. And thanks everyone for bringing this information to the table. I think it's really impactful that we can kind of look at all this information together and really make considerations. I will echo a little bit of the concern of Representative Bolden on the accountability piece, because for all the amazing work that's going on, with, in particular, the Children's Cabinet, I think if I'm remembering correctly, I think that the Children's Cabinet is targeting children from birth to 25. Is that correct, Commissioner Bailey?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Chair Pinto and Representative, I would say we very clearly take a whole family approach, but I would say the majority of sort of our time and capacity is focused on those early years.
Representative Tune.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's absolutely important to take kind of that whole family approach, because we know that our littlest Minnesotans become big Minnesotans and become hopefully parents in Minnesota, if that's the path that they choose to take. But I'm curious, and maybe this is just kind of me thinking about budget targets and, you know, kind of in a policy year when we were looking at this big surplus. I wonder, and I can't help but think, that if we had a Department of Early Childhood, that the legislature was accountable for funding and putting these policies into place, and there was folks in place that their sole responsibility was to make sure that we are doing the best that we can for our littlest Minnesotans, would it become glaringly obvious to the people of Minnesota how little of public investment is targeted toward our youngest Minnesotans? You know, we know once they hit five and we're investing in our public schools and everything like that. But before that, I mean, there's a lot of work that's being done, but there's not a lot of our funds, you know, so we're not necessarily putting our money where our mouths are when it comes to really investing in these earliest years, in these most formative years. And we spent a lot of time in this committee learning so much, and I'm going to, you know, zip my lip now because I'm really excited to hear from Mr. Worry. But that's just kind of where my head's at. And I think, you know, when we take a look at the money, and what we can do in a year, potentially with a really large budget surplus, and then ongoing, how we could invest in our littlest Minnesotans and make sure that their families are getting the support where they need the most.
Thank you, Representative Coutines-Ratoon. Here's what I'm thinking is that's actually a really nice transition to our next presenter, and there will be time then to talk afterwards, and I definitely would want to hear comments from various folks on that, but this is actually a nice transition. I just want to note, Mr. Dan Worry from Hunt Institute is our next guest, and yeah, please bring this on up. And I had asked him to present today, simply because the Hunt Institute, Mr. Worry, worked directly with a number of states around the country in different ways in governance. I want to make sure to understand this is not at all intended as a critique or anything of the incredible work of the MAD team, the MMB team. But I felt like it was kind of nice to have a different angle from someone who's worked directly with some states, and so just a different lens on this to share. So, Mr. Worry, please take it away from here, and the members will have some more time afterwards for continued conversation. Mr. Worry.
Chair Pinto, thank you so much. And let me just, Mr. Kane, take a moment to orient here technology-wise. Are you able to see the slide?
We're seeing your full screen. So we see your slide, but also so you're not in presentation mode, but I think you're about to be.
How about
that? There you go. Yep. Good stuff.
Well, first off, thank you for the opportunity to be here. And I would absolutely, Chair Pinto, echo your sentiments that, you know, my perspective here today is one just from a national perspective, working with these issues, and certainly not a response in any way to the report, which I do have to say, you know, I have had the opportunity to read and really want to express my appreciation up front to Matt and to Mr. Kane and to Commissioner Bailey. I think the report does a very nice job of spelling out, you know, a lot of the major issues here. So let me begin just by saying again, you know, my name is Dan Worry. I'm the Senior Director of Early Learning at the Hunt Institute, which is located in Cary, North Carolina, which is just outside of Raleigh. For those of you who may not be familiar with our work, the Institute was founded just over 20 years ago by a very ardent champion for education, four-term governor of North Carolina, Jim Hunt. The Institute is a nonpartisan education policy support. We work closely with governors and state lawmakers and other senior state elected and administrative officials around the country. We really cover across the breadth of our work, the full educational continuum from prenatal on up through post-secondary and workforce, but my work is specific to the early childhood portion of that, and I'm lucky to lead a team of 10 professionals that is working to support states in this area, really across a wide variety of topics in early childhood. But no question, one of the areas that we have really seen kind of a proliferation of policymaker questions over the past 18 months really seem to be accelerating is in this question of early childhood governance. And so we have had the good fortune to actually work with, you know, directly with states implementing a number of these models. And so don't want to be too repetitive of what you have heard from Mr. Kane, but want to maybe share some insights that we have picked up along the way around the workings of those systems. Candidly, across the country, you know, one of the things that I would say to you is that despite all good intentions, it's sort of generous in some cases. And again, I'm not singling out Minnesota here, but You know, in some ways, it's sort of generous to call what, you know, what we call state early childhood systems, even systems. And that is a function in a lot of ways of the way that early childhood programs are funded. The federal government is a major player in you know, sending funds to the states, and then, you know, on top of that, each state, you know, for its own part, is providing not only matching dollars to some of those federal resources, but is creating state-funded opportunities to support young children and families on their own. Partly because of the function and the way that those federal funding streams work, you know, there are health-related streams, there are childcare-related streams, there are education-related streams. The way that those sort of travel to the states historically sort of follows the path of least resistance, with education dollars obviously going to education agencies and so on, in a way that creates a sort of a you know, a confusing mix of, you know, multiple different funding streams that in states can be spread out across 4, 5, 6 or more state agencies. And this can really be a challenge systematically. It certainly, you know, as Mr. Kane pointed out, can create programmatic silos where, you know, programs that, you know, ought to be, I think, by all rights, sort of coordinated, but that maybe they're just operating in different agencies, you know, can create inefficiency, certainly has opportunities to create some level of duplication of effort. And so, you know, that's a challenge that a lot of states have been facing. And in recent years, again, one of the things that states have been doing is, you know, really pushing toward how do we streamline these systems? How do we make them more efficient? And importantly, how do we avoid creating what can be a very confusing sort of bureaucratic maze for families that need services? Imagine, you know, put yourself in the shoes of a family that may need to access services from the state, and finding out that, you know, across your various needs, that you may need to go and access these services in 5 different state agencies, for example. And so I think that is, you know, one of the driving forces behind states really looking at this early childhood governance model and trying to do things a little bit differently. Matt did a nice job, and the report actually does a really lovely job in detail of spelling out examples and giving case studies from some of the states across the nation. But I want to point just from recent experience to 4 states that we have worked with recently. I would say, you know, up front that we, you know, definitely concur with MAD's finding that there is not a single consensus way to do this in the states. And I think actually the states that we have been working with over the past 18 months on this topic actually illustrate that point really nicely, because each of them have taken different approaches. And as you'll see here, as I line this out, have actually taken somewhat conflicting approaches even to this work. On the left-hand side of the screen here, you see the state flags from New Mexico and Missouri, both of which I would love into kind of a new category, maybe beyond what we've talked about this morning, which is a kind of a creation category. So in New Mexico, Governor Lujan Grisham and the legislature there have actually created recently a brand new standalone consolidated children's department that deals with early childhood, and so have consolidated all of the services for the most part serving young children and families into what is now known as the Early Childhood Education and Care Department, or ECECD. So it is a brand new creation, a standalone agency. Missouri has taken almost the very same approach, except rather than create a new standalone agency, they have created what is known as the Office of Childhood within their Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. So functionally, the two serve very very similar roles and contain really many of the same programs, but one state has created a standalone agency and the other has nested it within a larger agency structure that serves more than just early childhood. So, you know, those are two recent examples of creation. I would flag for you, though it is still very much in process, Oregon is in the process of moving in this direction, as is Colorado. And then on the consolidation front, you know, sort of Chair Pinto, to your point earlier of sort of defining this, you know, where in the creation category, certainly they have consolidated, but they have consolidated essentially all services for young children. They've created sort of a one-stop agency, whereas there are other states that are, yes, in the process of consolidating it, but doing it a little bit more incrementally, maybe moving one program at a time. And so we are working currently with the state of Delaware, where they are moving childcare into their Department of Education. And to the point of how differently the states are doing these things, we're also working in North Dakota, where they are moving pre-K out of the Department of Education and into their Department of Human Services. So in both cases, they are consolidating pre-kindergarten offerings with childcare, but in one case moving into the Department of Education, in another case moving out of the Department of Education. So
yeah. Mr. Ward, I'm going to give you a pretty strict 5-minute notice here, just because I want to make sure we have some time at the end.
Absolutely. So. Yep, I'm moving along. So the common denominator across all of these, across all of these states is that there is an effort underway to make for a better and more efficient system for children and families. And I, you know, was encouraged looking at the report that I hear that and certainly hear that from Commissioner Bailey today. I think, you know, we are yet, you know, regardless of the structure that states take, you know, yet to run into a state that says, yep, we got this problem licked and, you know, we've got all the answers and, you know, nothing could be improved. So, you know, all are on their way. Maybe a couple of lessons, though, that I would share sort of quickly and then happy to answer any questions that you may have. You know, I think guidance that I have for you right now would be to sort of, you know, to Aaron's point, resolve to improve. I think, you know, one of the temptations when you receive a report like this, which many states have undertaken similar studies, and they find, you know, when you find that there is not a single definitive sort of path to take here, that there is sort of a paralysis that happens in terms of inaction. So, you know, I would definitely encourage you one way or another, independent of the structure that you choose, to, you know, to resolve to get on a path toward improvement. What that looks like, you know, I think it can vary very much state to state. But, you know, I think you're in a good place. I think the only wrong choice here is to decide not to act. And I think it, you know, it sounds as though there's definitely momentum around there. A couple of notes that I wanted to share around sort of pros and cons, you know, similar to Matt, but maybe with some direct experience working in these systems. One, I feel very well qualified to talk to you a little bit about the challenges of a coordinated system. Prior to coming to the Hunt Institute, I served for nearly 15 years as the deputy director and sort of de facto chief of staff for South Carolina's early childhood agency, First Steps, which is a coordinated system. Its board of trustees serves as sort of a children's cabinet of sorts, the major child-serving agencies all represented there. What I can tell you is, you know, first off, that, you know, can these coordinated systems work? The answer is an unqualified yes. You know, they can, and they can be absolute models for the country. What I would tell you, though, is that these coordinated systems, you know, from 2 decades worth of experience across multiple different gubernatorial administrations in South Carolina, is that these coordinated models, especially Chair Pinto, as you mentioned, sort of these informal coordinated models, can be highly dependent on leadership in place at any given time, the gubernatorial administration, and the personalities involved, you know, at the agency level, and, you know, their their willingness and propensity to collaborate, and frankly, just their agency priorities at those points in time. So, you know, a well-coordinated system, you know, at any given point in time doesn't necessarily stay that way. And I can tell you from, you know, direct experience across multiple administrations that, you know, South Carolina has seen many, many ups and downs. It's functioning very well now. One suggestion that I might have for you, if the decision is to continue on this path of a coordinated system, maybe there's an opportunity for you to explore codifying what really is working well. If you decide that things are going well right now, maybe it's an opportunity for you as a committee to sit down with Commissioner Bailey and the you know, the agency leaders that have been involved in this conversation and say, what are you doing well right now that we might put into the code to ensure that, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when maybe this same mix of leadership isn't in place, you know, how could we set the expectation that you're going to work, you know, that future leaders are going to work together as efficiently as you are currently in the current system? So I think, you know, that may be one thing to approve. In terms of consolidation, you know, this sort of piecemeal approach like Delaware and North Dakota are taking, I would tell you, you know, it can be slow and incremental, and that in some cases, you know, moving one program at a time can limit the immediate impact to families. On the other hand, though, the co-location, especially of really key programs that ought to be functioning together, can really lead to greater efficiency and coordination. I recognize, I so appreciate Mr. Kane's reference to sort of, you know, the feedback in the report was sometimes contradictory depending on the different stakeholders. I mean, no question, the states that we are working with are doing this to improve efficiency. I don't think anyone, you know, believes that they are not becoming more efficient in the process. And definitely, you know, one of the pros to consolidating, even on an incremental basis, is that there's an opportunity to be planful and to learn from the process, that moving one program, as complex as it may be, then, you know, teaches important lessons on, you know, that may be applied to sort of accelerate the movement of other programs over time. Last slide here, just, you know, in terms of creation, no question, this is a major undertaking for the states that are involved. It takes a lot of political will. It takes the cooperation of the major stakeholders. I would flag for you that there are definitely pros and cons to the different approaches, new agencies versus folding into an existing agency. My personal bent at this point is that there is some merit potentially to a new agency, a standalone agency, you know, just if for no other reason that, you know, agencies then tend to have their own budget hearings from a legislative perspective. And, you know, there is less of a propensity maybe for those services to get lost inside or even just not rise to the surface of being the most overriding priority for a larger agency. Let me pause there.
Maybe maybe you could take 10 seconds on those bullets on the right if there's something you want to say, but I do want to make sure to, if you think like you want to say we're on the front of bullets.
Again, I would say I am not here to advocate for any particular model. I think we've seen these things work. Personally, I do believe, you know, based in part on, you know, the lengthy experience that I've had within a coordinated system, that, you know, this creation and consolidation may have the most meaningful opportunity for efficiency and for program alignment. I think in coordinated systems, frequently we hear the goal of creating kind of a what we call a no wrong door system. But increasingly we're talking to states who say, yeah, that's good. But, you know, ultimately for families, don't we also want just fewer doors and an opportunity for this to be less of kind of a confusing process for the children and families that need to access services? So I will definitely pause and screen share. Thank you. happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thanks for those observations. Having worked with those states and just a lot of good information there. So members, we've got a little bit more time. If folks have questions, I'll have a couple of quick things I'll ask, but yeah, Representative Pryor, please. And either Mr. Worry or you may have more to Commissioner Bailey or our team too. Representative Pryor.
And I think this is just a quick question to Mr. Worley. So for the creation of the new agencies in New Mexico and in Missouri,
Missouri.
Yes. Yes. Yep. I'm thinking of the flag. how long did it take?
Well, that's a very, Mr. That, very, very good question. And I'm glad actually another point to raise that sort of speaks to, you know, two of the recommendations that Matt and company made in the report. You know, New Mexico, I would say, did this on a much more prolonged timeline, though still, you know, all things considered, a relatively aggressive timeline. You know, I would say there was about a year between the passage of the legislation and the startup of the new agency. And for about 6 or 7 months of that, there were actually staff on board, sort of a skeleton staff involved in getting the agency up and running. So a little bit longer runway to create that new agency in New Mexico. Missouri took, I think, what Matt called the fire the gun and worry about the consequences later sort of approach. They actually had a very tight timeline. Governor Parson issued an executive order creating that Office of Childhood, and they had something much closer to 4 months to actually pull this off. It's I'm not sure, candidly, that I would recommend that tight a timeline. Oregon, as I mentioned, is moving in this direction. They had set I think close to a year's timeline and have recently extended that and decided that, you know, that the agency, I think they're giving the agency an extra 6 months before they kick things off, really just in the recognition that this is too important to get wrong. There are a lot of systems, a lot of IT systems that have to work well together. So I think it's going to be a balance of, wanting to get something accomplished. And as you all know well from your work in the legislature, you know, sometimes you got to move when the political will is there to get something done, but also need to balance that against doing something potentially very complex in a really thoughtful way.
I'd like to ask Mr. Kane if he has anything that he wants to say in commentary, and no problem if not, but just in case you had anything as Mr. Worry was speaking, because of course you're our expert within Minnesota having studied this, and want to make sure to give you the chance in case there's anything that you would want to say, and no problem if not, but just in case there was.
No, I just appreciate Mr. Worry's comments and experience, and I'm happy to hear his insights.
Yeah, it felt generally pretty consistent with the points from your report. It seemed to me as a general matter, and can see you both nodding. I had, and actually a quick question for Mr. Worry, just the four states you talked about, and I know you've worked with others as well, are any of them county administered? You know, Minnesota has a system where a number of our programs are state funded, county administered, and just wondering if that's true of any of those four states, if you know.
Chair Pinto, not to the best of my knowledge. That's not...
I see the commissioner shaking her head, so she would know that. Okay, thank you, because that may be an important point as well. Commissioner, certainly, if you have any commentary you want to make on that, feel free to jump on in. But you know, different states, different models. Commissioner.
Yeah, Chair Pinto, I think Colorado potentially in some of those discussions. I would just say it's a really we outline in our cover memo the importance of that. We talk about state governance, and then families are interacting with a different set of services underneath that. And so, and again, I don't want you to hear any argument or pushback on me about like, this is the direction and conversation we need to have. But that layer is an essential variable that a lot of these pieces, examples that Dr. Worry had shared are a little bit unique in our situation.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And actually, then Commissioner, another question for you. I had heard you earlier talking about there being some next steps that you all are looking at, and they will need resources. And I kind of heard you say, but they won't necessarily need legislative action, which implied to me maybe, and I think you maybe even said, we're looking at different sources for those funds. I mean, could you use some resources? Would that be, I would think that if the legislature could possibly provide some funding to help with that, that would be helpful. But could you just comment on that? I just want to make sure I'm really understanding kind of where you're at on that.
Yeah, Chair Pinto, thanks for the question. I think this is a very important conversation that needs to happen either way. And so we will, identifying resources to do that would be very helpful, and appreciate help in that, and also kind of thinking about some other ways to utilize that without that. I just want to make, I have the floor, one more comment if you don't mind.
Please.
There were several compliments of the children's cabinet work from prior members of the committee. And I just, again, want to emphasize the children's cabinet is a platform for the leadership across the board. And there are many of my colleagues on the line and others here who are leading this incredible work. And we are just a shell for that work that can kind of pluck up and lift it up and help it get attention. But it is by no means our team alone. And a huge thanks to those division directors and agency leaderships who are also often maybe talked about not as champions for this, but truly are each and every day in their work.
Thank you, Commissioner. I had had, while this report was going on, I had had the chance to have some conversations with different agency leaders. Hopefully wasn't messing up Mr. Caton's work and having some of those conversations. But I'll say that in every one of those conversations, the agency leaders I spoke with were clearly very dedicated to the welfare of young kids, families, and just terrific. I will say that it makes me think a little bit about the point that came out in the report, and also that Dr. Worry made, that we are to a certain extent really dependent on incredible leaders and individuals. And so part of what I'm trying to think about is how do we institutionalize work so that we don't need to be too dependent on the incredible folks that we have in their role right now. And as we have changes in administrations and leaders, we kind of have the infrastructure in place. So I'll just say, Professor Bailey, regarding this point about funding for your next steps, please know that I'm very open to and would love to connect with you, but it may make sense for there to be a proposal, some funding that we would try to move through to assist that. I note from the report, there's concerns about IT infrastructure and needs there, wondering if there might be some things that we could do regarding that. So just know that I'm really interested in that. I think other members are as well. I'm just looking to see if I have other hands up and not seeing them. I just want to highlight for members of the committee, members of the public, that there's meeting materials in which include a letter that is urging consolidation, but I think also making some broader points as well, signed by the Child Care Association, Head Start, YMCA's, Isaiah Education Minnesota, and the Crisis Working Group, which includes the Chamber of Commerce, Itasca Project, Minnesota Business Partnership, and others. And so direct folks' attention to that, because it's a pretty impressive wide group with an interest in early child governance issues. So I'm really grateful to MAD for your hard work and your really subtle work, it seems to me, and what you've pulled together. And again, I want to urge members to please dive into the details of the report. And I just wanted to close. I think we're going to bump the bill that we were going to hear off to a different hearing. I just want to close by noting that the MAD report makes the point that we need to sort of start with the goal and then have the governance structure follow up. And I just want to note for me as chair having the floor here, just that for me, the fundamental goal is to raise the long-term visibility and support for this area. So we know, as many people have identified, that over time, this has been so deeply underfunded, and it's an area that has not been visible in the legislative process, the budget process, in some administrations, not at all in this one. We have incredible leaders in this administration. But it does seem to me that we need long-term visibility over time, which I believe will lead to support. And so just to sort of say that, to my mind, at least for me, the goal is clear enough for me as an individual, at least, and that's the purpose of that we should build our governance around that goal of raising long-term visibility and support. And so to toss that out, I'm looking to see if there's any other hands from anybody. I'm so grateful to all of our presenters and to all for your hard work. And we will, again, I think we'll bump the bill off to another time. And members, thank you so much. And we'll look forward to seeing you on Tuesday with some more bills. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. Thanks so much.